ज्ञानतिमिनन्दस्य जनार्जनशलाकया चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायं प्रकदमायं ददति स वन्दन्तिकम् मन्त्रकपितृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैः च पठितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः We've heard how Ajamil was saved from the clutches of the Yamadutas by the Vishnudutas, but actually he was saved by the power of the Lord's holy name, which is none different from the Lord. And after the Yamadutas left, and then Ajamil regained his consciousness, and the Vishnudutas left. Ajamil understood how close he had been to dying, and he appreciated so much how he had been saved by the potency, the mercy and potency of the Vishnudutas. And what did he do at that time? He immediately began lamenting that he had performed so many inappropriate, sinful activities. One by one, he listed them in his own, to himself, basically. And Prabhupada's purport explained very clearly how this is part of the activities of a Vaishnava, not only giving up one's previous, one's sinful activities, but lamenting that one had ever performed them, because they entangle us so deeply in the material world, and that lamentation is important because that will help us from going backwards into those activities again. So after lamenting, Ajamil decided that from now on he was going to determinedly give up his identification with the body, the mind, and engage himself fully in Krishna's service. So with great determination, he went to Haridwar. And there he took shelter in that holy place of a Vishnu temple and engaged his mind always in the service of the Lord. Then, after describing how Ajamil ultimately, when he was purified, when he was further purified by engaging in bhakti in that way, through his deity service and focusing his mind on the Lord, at that time, or after some time, the Vishnudutas returned to bring him back to Godhead, and he died and went to the spiritual world. So this story had a happy ending due to the mercy of the holy names, and really ultimately due to Krishna's mercy. Yes, thank you. Then Sukadev Goswami described the mercy that was shown to Ajamil, and he ends the chapter with the last three verses. I'll read those three verses, and then we'll read, two of them have nice purports by Srila Prabhupada. We'll read that and then go on to the third chapter. Because remember that the question that sparked this discussion was about the process of atonement, how one could become free from the reactions, from sinful deeds that will force one into hellish suffering. So that was Prickett Maharaj's question out of his compassion for others. So he asked that, and in response, Sukadev narrated the story of Ajamil, which reveals the potency, or the potency of the holy names, and in this way reveals the process, the best of all processes of atonement. Although the Lord's holy names can award so much more than the removal of the reactions to previously performed sins. Rather, the holy names can award prema bhakti, if one chants with great love. But because the question was having to do with atonement, this is the context in which the pastime of Ajamil has been described. Ajamil, of course, was freed from all the sinful reactions to his chanting his holy name. But this verse, or the next verse, also describes that if one chants the holy name, it will carry one back to Godhead, if one inoffensively chants the holy name. So here are these last three verses. Therefore, one who desires freedom from material bondage should adopt the process of chanting and glorifying the name form, name fame, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at whose feet all the holy places stand. One cannot derive the proper benefit from other methods such as pious atonement, speculative knowledge, and meditation in mystic yoga, because even after following such methods, one takes the fruit of activities again, unable to control his mind, which is contaminated by the base qualities of nature, namely passion and ignorance. We'll read all three verses and then the purports. Because this very confidential historical narration has the potency to vanquish all sinful reactions, one who hears or describes it with faith and devotion is no longer doomed to hellish life, regardless of his having a material body, and regardless of how sinful he may have been. So all the atonement, removal of the reactions to previously performed sins is granted by hearing or describing this narration with faith. So he is no longer doomed to hellish life, regardless of his having a material body and regardless of how sinful he may have been. Indeed, the Yamadutas who carry out the orders of Yamaraj do not approach him, even to see him. After giving up his body, he returns home back to Godhead, where he is very respectively received and worshipped. While suffering at the time of death, Ajamil chanted the holy name of the Lord. And although the chanting was directed towards his son, he nevertheless returned home back to Godhead. So, just imagine if one chanted with great love and affection what the result would be. So many manifold times more. So he went back to Godhead basically because he was chanting Krishna's names indicating his son Narayan. So how powerful are the holy names that just the abbas, the reflection of the holy names, awards liberation. So therefore, if the holy names, if chanted to indicate something else, is so powerful. Sukadev concludes this chapter by saying, therefore, if one faithfully and inoffensively chants the holy name of the Lord, where is the doubt that he will return to Godhead? So therein lies our mission, to faithfully and inoffensively chant the Lord's holy name. Two purports to these verses. If one actually has, it actually has been seen that even after achieving so-called perfection, many karmis, gyanis, and yogis become attached to material activities again. Many so-called swamis and yogis give up material activities as false, saying jagat mitya, that the material world has no substance, it's illusory, it's not real, it's false. But after some time, they nevertheless resume material activities of opening hospitals and schools, or performing other activities for the benefit of the public. Sometimes they participate in politics, although they still falsely declaring themselves sannyasis, members of the renounced order. So what is the falsity of that? Because if one is saying that the material world is illusion like a dream, then what is the rationale for entering into the dream and doing welfare work? If I'm dreaming that I'm sick and someone wants to help me, is there any benefit that he becomes a doctor in my dream and cures my disease? No, just if he knows that I'm dreaming, then just simply wake it up, wake me up. Obviously, one can't fix what's wrong in the dream world and claim that that's welfare work. No, if one's saying the material world is illusion, it has no substance, then what is the benefit, what is the value of opening up a hospital in the material world to cure something that doesn't exist? If the material world is illusion, then disease is also illusion. And ignorance due to lack of education is also illusion. So why engage in these illusory activities of educating and doctoring, then, if that's the viewpoint? So Prabhupada is showing by this example that the impersonalists who claim that the world is illusion, they end up having again to act in this illusory world. And this is in glorification of bhakti, because one who attains perfection in bhakti never again does he act in relationship with the material world. He only acts in relationship with Krishna. So the perfect conclusion, however, is that if one actually desires to get out of the material world, he must take to devotional service, which begins with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. The Krishna consciousness movement has actually proved this. In the Western countries, many young boys who were addicted to drugs and who had many other bad habits which they could not give up, abandoned all those propensities and very seriously engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord as soon as they joined the Krishna consciousness movement. In other words, this process is the perfect method of atonement for actions performed in Raja and Tama, passion and ignorance. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Tada Rajas Tamo Bhava Kama Lobadeyas Chaye Cheta Itar Anavidam Stitam Satve Prasidati. As a result of Raja and Tama, one becomes increasingly lusty and greedy as a result of passion and ignorance. But when one takes to the process of chanting and hearing, one comes to the platform of goodness and becomes happy. As he advances in devotional service, all his doubts are completely eradicated. Vidyate vidyagrantis chidyante sarvasamsaya. Thus the knot of his desire for fruit of activities is cut into pieces. Prabhupada's purport to the final verse. At the time of death, one is certainly bewildered because his bodily functions are in disorder. What happens at the time of death? Breathing, very, very, very difficult. The heartbeat doesn't work. One by one, the senses shut down. Do you know which is the last sense to leave us? Hearing, yeah. What a great fortune. You go blind. I've seen this. And then all that's left, the only way, the only communication with the world is through hearing. And what can one hear if one is fortunate? One can hear Krishna's names. And that affects one's consciousness. So at that time, when all the bodily functions are in disorder, even at that time, even one who throughout his life has practiced chanting the holy name of the Lord may not be able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra very distinctly. One has no energy. One's prana or life force is so diminished that one can't speak and can't chant practically. Nevertheless, such a person receives all the benefit of chanting the holy name. While the body is fit, therefore, why should we not chant the holy name of the Lord loudly and distinctly? If one does so, it is quite possible that even at the time of death, he will be properly able to chant the holy name of the Lord with love and faith. But one should practice in this life. During the life, when we have strength, while we have energy, while our mind is functioning properly, we should practice chanting with love and faith. In conclusion, one who chants the holy name of the Lord constantly is guaranteed to return home back to Godhead without a doubt. So, we should chant constantly. That is really the goal. Today I read the book that I was given about Kumbh Mela, and there was some discussion by Prabhupada about Prabhupada. There were some recollections of Prabhupada's attendance at the 1977 Kumbh Mela, great festival gathering of sadhus. Millions of people attend. So Prabhupada was talking about Ajamil, and he was glorifying the chanting of the holy name, and he said we should chant constantly. So, and in that regard he said, if we have an examination and if we think we're going to pass with great distinction, probably we'll end up with a first class grade. If we attempt to pass with distinction, highest possible honors, then we'll end up with a first class grade. And if we try to get a first class, if we make that our goal to get a first class grade, then we'll end up with a second or third class grade. And if we try to get a, if we make it our goal to attain a third class grade, we'll end up with something still lower. So Prabhupada, he was saying this in reference to saying that we should chant constantly. So what is the parallel? That unless one is a pure lover of Krishna, it's actually not possible for one to chant constantly. Yet we should set that as our goal. And we'll end up chanting some of the time. If we start with, I should chant some of the time, then we'll end up chanting once. And if we say, I'll chant once, then we'll end up never chanting. So we should set this goal very high. We should make it our goal to chant constantly. And then, one who chants the holy name of the Lord constantly, Prabhupada explains in the last line of the last purport of this chapter, such a person is guaranteed to return home back to Godhead without a doubt. So now it will begin chapter 3. We've heard how Ajamil has gone back to Godhead and the holy names have been glorified by Sukadev Goswami as being able to not only liberate us but to carry us back to Godhead. Also, earlier, previously in the chapter, before Ajamil awakened, well, just after the discussion between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas were going on, the Yamadutas left and went back to Yamaraj, their master. And then, from then on, we heard what Ajamil did up to the point of his going back home, back to Godhead. But what happened to the Yamadutas? What did they do when they went to their master, Yamaraj? So now this third chapter will describe that. First verse. King Parikit asked, O my Lord, O Sukadeva Goswami, Yamaraj is the controller of all living entities in terms of their religious and irreligious activities. But his order had been foiled. His order was that sinful Ajamil should be picked up, and his order carriers, the Yamadutas, had tried to pull the soul from his bodies for the purpose of punishing him. But they were unable to do it. When his servants, the Yamadutas, informed him, Yamaraj, of their defeat by the Vishnudutas, who had stopped them from arresting Ajamil, what did he reply? So this is the question of Raj Cricket. Because they came to him, we'll hear it, they came to him saying, we tried to do this on your order, but we couldn't. Never before have we been stopped please explain this to us. How is this possible? How could it have happened? Text 2. O great sage, never before has it been heard anywhere that an order from Yamaraj has been baffled. Once it's time to die, one dies. Therefore, I think that people will have doubts about this, and no one but you can eradicate that. No one but you can eradicate. Since that is my firm conviction, kindly explain the reasons for these events. So how is it possible that Yamaraj's order, death's order, because there's a saying, it is as sure as death, unstoppable death. But death was stopped. It was his time to die, and it was stopped. Will people believe that? That's what he's asking. Explain it. What happened? How is it possible? Text 3. Srila Sukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, when the order carriers of Yamaraj were baffled and defeated by the order carriers of Vishnu, they approached their master, the controller of the Samyamani Puri. That's the place of Yamaraj. We heard about this actually at the end of the fifth canto. The controller of Samyani Puri and master of sinful persons. They approached him, Yamaraj, Dhamaraj, to tell him of this incident. So the Yamadutas began to present their case to Yamaraj, complaining, how has this happened? And so in text 4 through 10, they speak. The Yamadutas said, our dear Lord, how many controllers or rulers are there in this material world? Because we thought that you were the topmost. And therefore, if you're the topmost and we were carrying out your order and we had your power backing us, how is it possible that we weren't successful? So how many controllers or rulers are there in this material world? How many causes are responsible for manifesting the various results of activities performed under the three modes of material nature? They're saying, so one, it's a little bit clearer, and then we'll go read the purports. If in this universe there are many rulers and justices, in other words, if there are different standards, if one controller says this person is sinful, and here are the standards that we judge sin and sinlessness. But there's another controller who says, well, here are different standards how you judge. So if there are many rulers and justices, systems of justice, who disagree about punishment and reward, they disagree about what is sin and what is sinlessness, their contradictory actions will neutralize each other. One person says this person is very pious, another person says that this person is impious. And no one will be punished or rewarded, because one person will say, oh, he's sinful, and someone else will say, oh, he's sinless. So it will neutralize each other, and no one will ever be punished or rewarded. Otherwise, if the contradictory acts fail to neutralize each other, everyone will have to be both punished and rewarded. So if one person says he's sinless, he should be freed, and the other person says, no, he's sinful and should be punished, either they neutralize each other or they'll have to be both punished and rewarded. So they're confused about how the system works. This is the first time they've been thwarted. Prabhupada purport to text 4. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraj, were so disappointed that they asked their master, almost in great anger, whether there were many masters other than him. Furthermore, because the Yamadutas had been defeated and their master could not protect them, they were inclined to say that there was no need to serve such a master. If a servant cannot carry out the orders of his master without being defeated, what is the use of serving such a powerless master? The master says, you do this, you do this, you do this, I'll protect you. But there's no protection issuing forth, then the servants will lose their inclination to do the service. Text 5, purport. Because the Yamadutas had been unsuccessful in carrying out the order of Yamaraj, they doubted whether Yamaraj actually had the power to punish the sinful. Although they had gone to arrest Ajamil, following Yamaraj's order, they found themselves unsuccessful because of the order of some higher authority. Therefore, they were unsure whether there were many authorities or just one. If there were many authorities who gave different judgments which could be contradictory, a person might be wrongly punished or wrongly rewarded, or he might be neither punished nor rewarded. According to our experience in the material world, a person punished in one court may appeal to another. Thus, the same man may be either punished or rewarded according to different judgments. However, in the law of nature, or the court of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there cannot be such contradictory judgments. The judges and their judgments must be perfect and free from contradictions. Actually, the position of Yamaraj was very awkward in the case of Ajamil, because the Yamadutas were right in attempting to arrest Ajamil, but the Vishnudutas had baffled them. Although Yamaraj, under these circumstances, was accused both by the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas, because the Vishnudutas accused Yamaraj and his servants, the Yamadutas, of not truly accurately understanding the principles of religion, and therefore they were arresting a sinless person. So the Vishnudutas were criticizing Yamaraj, and now the Yamaraj's own servants, order carriers, the Yamadutas, were also criticizing him for not empowering them properly to execute his will, his order of punishing the sinful person. So Yamaraj was in a difficult position here. Although Yamaraj, under these circumstances, was accused by both the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas, he is perfect in administering justice because he is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he will explain what his real position is and how everyone is controlled by the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. So Yamaraj was correct, but yet not correct. Actually, his actions were under the Lord's control. Text 6. The Yamadutas continued. Since there are many different karmis or workers, there may be different judges or rulers to give them justice. But just as one central emperor controls different departmental rulers, there must be one supreme controller to guide all the judges. Hope that's a short purport. In governmental management, there may be departmental officials to give justice to different persons. But the law must be one, and that central law must control everyone. The Yamadutas could not imagine that two judges would give two different verdicts in the same case, and therefore they wanted to know who the central judge is. The Yamadutas were certain that Ajamil was a most sinful man. They had his record right before them, and they saw the horrible things he had done. They had judged him clearly sinful because he had committed so many sinful acts. But although Yamaraj wanted to punish him, the Vishnudutas excused him. This was a puzzling situation that the Yamadutas wanted Yamaraj to clarify. They continue. The supreme judge must be one, not many. It was our understanding that you are the supreme judge and that you have jurisdiction even over the demigods. Our impression was that you are the master of all living entities, the supreme authority who discriminates between the pious and impious actions of all human beings. So they had mistaken Yamaraj, who was a departmental head, a demigod, although so powerful, as the supreme. And they had seen previously that never before had his order been thwarted. So therefore they thought that he was all powerful, because it's only one who has all power has the power to his desire, his order always is fulfilled. So they continue. But now we see, we thought that you were supreme, but now we see that the punishment ordained under your authority is no longer effective, since your order has been transgressed by four wonderful and perfect persons. Those were the Vishnudutas. We were bringing the most sinful Ajamil towards the hellish planets following your order, when those beautiful persons from Siddhaloka, Siddhaloka meaning the spiritual world, forcibly, when those beautiful persons from Siddhaloka forcibly cut the knots of the ropes which we were arresting him. Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that the Yamadutas wanted to bring the Vishnudutas before Yamaraj. If Yamaraj could then have punished the Vishnudutas, the Yamadutas would have been satisfied. Text 10. As soon as the sinful Ajamil uttered the name Narayana, these four beautiful men immediately arrived and reassured him, saying, "Do not fear, do not fear. We wish to know about them from your lordship. If you think we are able to understand them, kindly describe who they are." The order carriers of Yamaraj, being very much aggrieved because of their defeat by the four Vishnudutas, wanted to bring them before Yamaraj and if possible punish them. Otherwise they desired to commit suicide. Before pursuing either course, however, they wanted to know about the Vishnudutas from Yamaraj, who was also omniscient. So herein the Yamadutas asked several questions. Who is the Supreme Lord who has the power, the ultimate power to judge and to execute his will, his order, in justice? And who are those Vishnudutas? Describe them to us. So Yamaraj is omniscient, he knows everything, so he's going to begin his reply. Sukadev Goswami said, "Thus, having been questioned, Lord Yamaraj, the supreme controller of the living entities, was very pleased with the order carriers." Why was he pleased? They had just criticized him. They were angry with him. Why was he pleased? He was pleased because of hearing from them the holy name of Narayan. He remembered the lotus feet of the Lord, and he began to reply. Prabhupada's purport. Srila Yamaraj, the supreme controller of the living entities in terms of their pious and impious activities, he's the awarder of the results of everyone's activities. He was very pleased with his servants. Why? Because they had chanted the holy name of Narayan in his dominion. Yamaraj has to deal with men who are all sinful and who can hardly understand Narayan. Consequently, when his order carriers uttered the name of Narayan, he was extremely pleased. For he is also a Vaishnava. He is one of the Mahajans, the great authorities. And he will be describing that later on. So Yamaraj, as we'll hear, is a controller, but he is not the supreme controller. And we'll be hearing that in the next 6 or 7 verses. And who are the Vishnudutas? They are his servants. "My dear servants," Yamaraj began, "you have accepted me as the supreme, but factually, I am not. Above me and above all the other demigods, including Indra and Chandra, is one supreme master and controller. The partial manifestation of his personality are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who are in charge of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this universe. He is like the two threads that form the length and breadth of a wooden of a woven cloth. So a cloth, any cloth, it has, the Sanskrit is, it's otam protam. There's a, what's the English word for that? The woof and the wift? Weft? The woof and the weft? Something like that, isn't it? Is that what it is exactly? Warp
and weft.
Warp and woof. Warp and woof? Something. Warp is one and woof is the other.
Weft.
Weft?
W-E-F-T.
Weft. So it's warp and weft. Thank you. The warp and the weft, the otam and the protam. So this is the this is reality. It is him by his energies that are holding reality together, as the otam and the protam, the warp and the weft, are holding. They make up the cloth. He is like the two threads that form the length and breadth of a woven cloth. The entire world is controlled by him, just as a bull is controlled by a rope in its nose. Purport. The order carriers of Yamaraj suspected that there was a ruler even above Yamaraj. To eradicate their doubts, Yamaraj immediately replied, "Yes, there is one supreme controller above everything. Yamaraj is in charge of some of the moving living entities, namely the human beings. But the animals who also move are not under his control. Only human beings have consciousness of right and wrong. And amongst them, only those who perform sinful activities come under the control of Yamaraj. Therefore, although Yamaraj is a controller, he is only a departmental controller of a few living entities. There are other demigods who control many other departments, but above them all is one supreme controller, Krishna. Ishwara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha. The supreme controller is Krishna. Others who control their own departments in the affairs of the universe are insignificant in comparison to Krishna, the supreme controller. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, 7th verse, Mata Prataram Na Anyat Kincharasti Dhananjaya. My dear Dhananjaya Arjuna, no one is superior to me. Therefore, Yamaraj immediately cleared away the doubts of his assistants, the Yamadutas, by confirming that there is a supreme controller above all others. Yamaraj continues, just as the driver of a bullock cart ties ropes through the nostrils of his bulls to control them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of his words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of the distinct orders of human society, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. In fear, the members of these orders all worship the Supreme Lord by offering him presentations according to their respective activities. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. So he's saying, because earlier when the Vishnu Dutas asked the Yama Dutas to define religion, their first reply was Veda Pranihitam Dharma, that religion is described in the Vedas. And what is religion? The proper actions is religion. That is called dharma. And what is proper and what is improper, this is described in the Vedic literatures in regard to different orders of life. Different individuals, according to their position in society, have different duties to perform. And those duties, if performed properly, are their religious duties, their swadharma. And if those duties are performed improperly, not according to the Vedic scriptures, they're acting irreligiously, sinfully, and they are meant to be punished. So then, after describing that, the Yamadutas described how those Vedas, which describe the the duties. What is the duties? They are coming from Lord Narayan, who is the supreme controller. And all living entities, by performing their duties properly, yatta pravatabhutanam yena savamidam tatam, they are meant to be worshipping the Lord by performance of those duties. It's an offering to Him. Purport. In this material world, everyone is conditioned, regardless of who he is. One may be a human being, a demigod, or an animal, tree or plant. But everything is controlled by the laws of nature. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, where Krishna says, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Satcharacharan. The material nature is working under my direction and producing all moving and non-moving beings. Thus Krishna is behind the material, the natural machine, which works under his control. So it is Krishna who is ultimately there, moving the material world, Maya Adi Aksha, under my supervision, under my direction, this material world is going on. Mata Parataram Na Anyat. I am the basic principle, Sutre Manigina Iva. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung upon a thread. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arsava Britta. There's one, ultimately, one supreme controller, and everyone is depending upon him. So now, we'll read a few sections of this purport. The divisions of varna and ashrama are necessary to ensure the proper execution of duties and peaceful existence for everyone. But everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord, who is all-pervading, yena savamidam tatam. The Supreme Lord exists vertically and horizontally, otam protam, the warp and the weft. The Supreme Lord exists vertically and horizontally, and therefore, if one follows the Vedic injunctions by worshipping the Supreme Lord according to one's ability, his life will be perfect. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, atap pumbir dvija shreshta svanashrama vabhagasa svanusthitasya samsadir haritoshanam. O best of the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, his dharma, his religious duties, according to caste, division, and orders of life, is to please Lord Hari. So that is the purpose of performing one's duties, to please Lord Hari, Lord Narayan, Krishna. The Varnashrama institution offers the perfect process for making one eligible to return home back to Godhead, because the aim of every varna and ashrama is to please the Supreme Lord. One can please the Lord under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, and if one does so, his life is perfect. The Supreme Lord is worshipable, and everyone worships him directly or indirectly. Those who worship him directly get the results of liberation quickly, whereas the liberation of those who serve him indirectly is delayed. So if one performs his vanashrama duties properly according to the scriptures, but not consciously aware that what he's really doing is pleasing Hari, gradually he'll come to perfection, because he'll be purified by his proper performance of duties. But superior to him is one, superior to such a person is one who performs his duties directly in the consciousness of yatta pravatabhutanam yena savamidam tatam. This duty, O Krishna, please be pleased. And this is how we should perform our duties, under the guidance of superior authority, spiritual master. How can I perform this duty, or how can I please Krishna by my actions? And if we develop this consciousness day after day, 24 hours a day, remembering Krishna in this way, thinking always, how can Krishna be pleased? Then we are in perfect Krishna consciousness. He continues, how can this Lord who is supreme, how can he be understood then? I, Yamaraj, Indra, the king of heaven, Driti, a demigod, Varuna, another demigod, Chandra, the moon god, Agni, Lord Shiva, Pavan, Lord Brahma, Surya, the sun god, Vishvasu, the eight Vasus, the Sadyas, the Maruts, the Rudras, the Siddhas, and Marichi, and other great rishis engaged in maintaining the departmental affairs of the universe, as well as the best of the demigods headed by Brihaspati, and the great sages headed by Bhrigu, are all certainly freed from the influence of two base material modes of nature, namely passion, ignorance. In other words, they are good. All these great souls and demigods are in the mode of goodness. Nevertheless, although we are in the mode of goodness, we cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then to be said of others who, under illusion, merely speculate to know God? So in other words, the first thing is that he's very hard to understand. Very hard to understand. The Lord is hard to understand. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The men and other living entities within this cosmic manifestation are controlled by the three modes of nature. For the living entities controlled by the base qualities of nature, passion, ignorance, there is no possibility of understanding God. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. That in goodness one gets knowledge. Knowledge is born of goodness. But even those in the mode of goodness, like the many demigods and great rishis described in these verses, cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who can understand him? If the great sages and rishis can't understand him, even though they are in the mode of goodness, what to speak of those in passion and ignorance? They can't understand. They have wrong conclusions. No matter how they try. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, one who is situated in the devotional service of the Lord is transcendental to all the material qualities. Therefore, the Lord personally says that no one can understand him but the bhaktis, the devotees, who are transcendental to all material qualities. Bhaktyamam abhijananti. As stated by Bhishma Dev to Maharaj Yudhisthira in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nahi asya karichit rajan pumam veda viditsitam yaj vigyasaya yukta muyanti kavayo pihi. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. No one therefore can understand God by speculative knowledge. No one can understand him, his plans, his activities. They hit the blank wall of our own limitations due to our being in the modes of material nature, even in goodness. And we cannot understand due to the limitations imposed by the material energy. And God, by definition, is beyond the material energy. If he's the creator of matter, that means he existed before matter. If he's the existed before matter, that means he's non-material. So he's beyond matter. Indeed, by speculation, one will be bewildered, muyanti. This is also confirmed by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, 3rd verse, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yattati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschid mam veti tatvata. Among many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And even amongst the siddhas, ones who are perfect, those who have already become perfect, only one who adopts the process of bhakti, devotional service, can understand Krishna. 16. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eye, so he's still explaining, Yamaraj is explaining how no one can understand who is supreme. Even the demigods who are in the mode of goodness can't understand, what to speak of those who are in passion ignorance, and now he's giving an example. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, naturally the arms, the legs, everything, the limbs of the body are directed by the eyes. We see the bead bag with our eyes, and therefore the arms and fingers will move, pick up the bead bag. So the direction comes from the eyes. So the limbs cannot see the eyes. So in a similar way, the living entities cannot see the Supreme Lord, who is situated, the super soul in everyone's heart. The living entities are dependent on the Lord for their own vision, but they can't see Him. In the same way that the limbs of the body are dependent upon the eyes for their own direction, their own seeing in that sense, but yet they cannot see the eyes themselves. So not by the senses, not by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibrations of words can the living entity ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. So there are so many different senses that are directed. None of them can see their eyes. The eyes do the seeing and the directing. So similarly, although we can understand things with our mind, we can do things with our life air, we have thoughts within the heart, we can say words, we can vibrate words, but none of these, through using all our own abilities to their fullest extent and in an ascending process, using our own power, we are unable to understand the Supreme Lord. Text 17. So now he has described the Lord. And now he's going, in text 17 and 18, he's going to describe the servants of the Lord, the Vishnu Dutas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they had asked about the Vishnu Dutas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient and fully independent. He's the master of everyone. This is defining God. And everything, including the illusory energy. He has His form, qualities, and features. And similarly, His aura carriers, the Vaishnavas, who are very beautiful, possess bodily features, transcendental qualities, and a transcendental nature, almost like His. They always wander within this world with full independence. The aura carriers of Lord Vishnu, who are worshipped even by the demigods, possess wonderful bodily features exactly like those of Vishnu. And they are very rarely seen. The Vishnu Dutas protect the devotees of the Lord from the hands of enemies, from envious persons, and even, Yamaraj says, from my jurisdiction, as well as from natural disturbances. So, of course, one of the results of hearing this narration is that the desire in our heart should begin to blaze more brightly to become Vaishnava, devotees of the Lord, actual, devoted to the Lord, transcendental devotees. Prabhupada's purport to these two verses, which are the last two we'll read. Yamaraj was describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller. But the order carriers of Yamaraj were very eager to know about the Vishnu Dutas who had defeated them in their encounter with Ajamil. Yamaraj therefore stated that the Vishnu Dutas resemble the Supreme Personality of Godhead in their bodily features, transcendental qualities, and nature. In other words, the Vishnu Dutas, or the Vaishnavas, are almost as qualified as the Supreme Lord. Yamaraj informed the Yamadutas that the Vishudutas are no less powerful than Lord Vishnu. And since Vishnu is above Yamaraj, the Vishudutas are above the Yamadutas. Persons protected by the Vishudutas, therefore, cannot be touched by the Yamadutas. Sometimes, Prabhupada explains in his purport to text 18, the members of the Krishna conscious society are afraid of the impending danger of world war and ask what would happen to them if a war would occur. In all kinds of danger, they should be confident of their protection by the Vishnu Dutas or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name bhakta pranashiti. Material danger is not meant for devotees. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavatam, padam padam yad vipadam natesham. In this material world, there are dangers at every step, but they are not meant for devotees who are fully surrendered into the lotus feet, unto the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is what it means to be the kind of devotee who Prabhupada is speaking of. They are fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. The pure devotees of Lord Vishnu, and they are pure devotees because of that, they may rest assured of the Lord's protection. And as long as they are in the material world, they should fully engage in devotional service by preaching the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, namely the Hare Krishna movement of Krishna consciousness. So this is the great gift of Srila Prabhupada, because possibly we're not able to chant constantly, as was previously mentioned, that would place us fully under the protection of the Lord. In previous ages, the great sages and saints used to go to secluded places and just do bhajan. They would worship the Lord and serve the Lord through chanting constantly, offering obeisances. They wouldn't sleep, practically speaking. But we, generally speaking, except in the most exceptional cases, don't have that kind of capacity. So then what can we do to place ourselves in fully in Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada explains here, they can fully engage in devotional service. How? By preaching the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, namely the Hare Krishna movement of Krishna consciousness. The Hare Krishna movement is meant for consciousness of Krishna through preaching. So this is very much the methodology that is of advancement that is at the heart, has been placed in the heart of Prabhupada's ISKCON by Srila Prabhupada. By preaching the cult of Mahaprabhu, they should fully engage in devotional service. Okay, we'll stop here. There's a change of topic going on. To Yamaraj will now answer some of the other questions about religion. What are the religious principles, the ultimate religious principles? So he's going to describe those in details after having described the Supreme Lord, the Lord's servants, and what is the highest principles that the Lord has expounded in religion. He's going to describe. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Yamaraj ki jai, Ajamil ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.